If you're just joining us, this is Spirit of the Valley with your host, Katie Michael Sanchez. We return to our conversation with Tim Spring about his work in interfaith relations.
Here in the Valley, I've had more opportunity for more encounters with people from other faiths here than I have up until, you know, moving to Bozeman. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it was that experience with working with students. Uh-huh. Backgrounds. And I remember one year, it was at the end of Ramadan, which is the holy month for Muslims. And there's fasting, you know, from sun up to sundown. And it was the last meal at the end of Ramadan, the iftar. And the Muslim Student Association was having it in our campus ministry facility. We tried to make it available for student groups from the community. And we were sitting there, and the president of the Muslim Student Association, we were just talking and sharing food. And he said, you know, Tim, we have our extremists and you have your extremists. And it was around the time when this Florida pastor was burning Qurans. Mm-hmm. So it's very much in the news. We have our extremists and you have our extremists, but we know that that's not the best of either of our traditions or religions. And I think that's true. And that's been my experience, that I don't know of any religion that teaches hate at its core. Mm-hmm. So I think he just died recently, Jonathan Sacks, he was the chief rabbi in Great Britain. And I'll get this wrong, but it kind of paraphrasing, my faith is not your faith, but kind of we can respect each other, and together we can each light our own candles and banish some of the darkness in the world. Mm-hmm. That working together, we can work. For example, the Gallatin Refugee Connections was birthed out of GVIA. It was a time when it was very much in the news. There were all these refugees from Syria and Congo. And so a small group of us took on the task of exploring what can we do to welcome refugees in Bozeman. And so, and eventually spun off a nonprofit, Gallatin Refugee Connections. But again, that was a way in which people from a different faith worked together to work to welcome. And then the election happened in 2016 and things changed. And so mm-hmm. But it was a way to, and we had, you know, group conversations, coffees, people could, we intentionally blended, had people from different traditions as a part of the group so that the people could hear one another and come to a better understanding, especially with Muslim students. It was when the Muslim ban went into effect and mm-hmm. the travel ban and all of that. So I guess always trying to seek to understand the other and to be as best I can and to reach out. Yeah. So, and I love, like for me in Islam, it would be Ramadan, this month long fasting that mm-hmm. it would, for me, would be a thing of holy envy.
Holy envy.
Yeah. It's really kind of neat that y'all do that. I remember one student who said, I was asking him, it was when Ramadan fell during the summer because it follows a lunar mm-hmm. calendar. And it was, so the days were long. And I said, so how's it going with not eating? And he said, well, the not eating is not bothering me, but not smoking is killing me.
So yeah.
I think there's, and humor has been, I think, an important part of, for me, of life and just trying not to take myself too seriously, which I can, mm-hmm. I can be very serious and intense, but, mm-hmm. but also just, I can find humor, you know, just everything. And sometimes you're in situations that you just step back and it's just so absurd. You've got to laugh about, mm-hmm. laugh mm-hmm. about it.
Yeah. I think humor is also an important piece of resilience. Yeah. Yes. Just how absolutely. we get through life.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's not all up to me. I will do what I can and work hard, but in the end, I know that it's not. It's just like, and I think that's what draws me to the work in chaplaincy, in the hospital, and in hospice, is that we are part of a interdisciplinary team. So we're working with doctors and nurses and home health aides and volunteers, and that together we each bring our own expertise and skills, but together we serve others in a way that each of us alone could not do. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I think that's another part for me of the kind of a theme through my life is community. Growing up in that church community, which, but then in college, I was part of the Lutheran Campus Ministry at Penn State, sponsored an intentional Christian community. So there were 10 students, it was co-ed. Then we shared a house, a three-story house, and we did shared meals together 5 nights a week, took turns cooking, divided up household chores. And so I've always been interested in exploring community, because I don't think we're not human beings alone, and we're not Christians alone. That community, as frustrating and as aggravating as it can be to live with other people, that we're called to that, and somehow that we're made for community. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we did as an outreach, that group of 10 people, I lived there for 2 years. It was before the days, at least in rural Pennsylvania, which was where Penn State was located. There was not a homeless shelter. There was no warming shelter. And so we would take transients for a night or two and just provide hospitality, a place to sleep, a meal. And that was, I think for me, a formative experience, just encountering folks who I hadn't before. Some, you know, were experiencing mental illness, some all kinds of experiences, you know, some veterans of the Vietnam War and others. But that was important, so that again, the community, we weren't just, you know, kind of isolated and, you know, turned in on ourselves, but that community reached out to offer something that was needed. Yeah. And then
as you're talking about this idea of community, what's sort of coming to me is in the Abrahamic traditions, this idea that, you know, we are created in God's image. Mm. And like, God is so vast and all encompassing that like you have to have a lot of people to complete the picture, right? No one person can be the entirety of an expression of God, and that we each have our role and our job to do. And so it's really only in community, right, that we can even start to see that full picture.
Right. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And for so long in the church, and even in my own tradition, as I said, it wasn't until 1970 that we began ordaining women to be pastors, that for so long, unfortunately, you know, the church has supported and encouraged, you know, kind of a patriarchal view of life. And that, when you read between the lines, and even in our holy scriptures, the Old and the New Testament, the Hebrew Bible and the New Testament, there are lots of women who are doing lots of amazing things.
Yeah.
And I'm sometimes amazed that, like in the gospel traditions, like in Matthew, he does kind of a genealogy of Jesus. And in that are included four women, you know, among all the male, four women who Old Testament women who were not Jewish. One was a prostitute who kind of let the people into Jericho. One had was the a survivor of rape. The story of Ruth, who she was a Moabite, was not Ruth. That those women are included in the genealogy. Mm-hmm. And then the first you know, the stories of Jesus' appearances after his resurrection, the first person, you know, to witness that was a woman, Mary Magdalene, mm-hmm. and then she tells the people, you know, tells the other disciples, and it's a long way of saying yes, that it takes more than one person, and not just males reflect mm-hmm. God's image, that it's yeah. male and female. And I think, you know, with the LGBTQ awareness that we know that God has created the much greater variety than we, you know, than the kind of binary thinking would indicate, mm. that there's just, the creation is much more varied than, I mean, I think we sometimes try to too much to categorize and to, and sometimes it comes down to an issue of power and control. It's, mm-hmm. So often, I mean, patriarchy it's all about power and control, and, you know, it could be scary. Okay, what does this mean? But somehow that we still, as a human species, even, that we're a product of evolution, and that continues to happen on some level, that the creation continues to evolve. And if for like big issues like climate change, it's going to take everyone committed to really make a difference. Mm-hmm. Christians and Muslims and people of all faiths and of no faith. And so another experience of community that, so this was the summer before my last year in seminary. So I have a four-year undergraduate degree and then a master's degree. So before my last year in graduate school and seminary, my wife and I took the summer, about 3.5 months, and hitchhiked and camped around Germany. And one of those months, we were part of an international work camp in the south of Germany. It was a community for people with cognitive impairments. And so the caregivers lived with the residents. And there were 14 of us, students from all over the world. There were some African and Italian and German and British, a guy from Turkey. And so it was not sponsored by the church. It was a secular, it had been started by a man who had been in had been a Nazi, a military person in World War II. And after the war, he just felt he wanted to do something that would promote unity. And so he created these work camps. I mean, that's probably not, but opportunities for international students to come together around a common purpose and to live in community. And so that was also informative, meeting people from different places, and, you know, so people who were Christians, but also people who were, you know, totally secular. Again, you know, we did all kinds of work there. And I think that when people come together, it just makes it, we can make great change and progress in terms of caring for others.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We can't do it by ourselves, that's for sure. I was thinking about, you know, as your life unfolded and you moved from undergrad to seminary to, you know, some of these other things that you've done, with all these interests that you had, do you feel like there was a role that God or the divine, or sort of, you know, was there any role that played in how your decisions were made, or was there a path that you feel like had been laid out, or,
Yeah, good question. So I think for the early part of my life, it was kind of thinking about, okay, what does God want me to do with my life? And mm-hmm. And it was during actually clinical pastoral education, which is a part of the formation. You work in a clinical setting, healthcare setting often, and there's individual supervision and group work and everything. And it was one of my individual supervision sessions. And again, I was still working with, okay, maybe I'd like to be a university professor. Maybe I'd like to do, be a clinical psychologist, maybe a pastor, and kind of working with that. And I remember in the comment that my supervisor said, it's always been important to Tim what God wants, but it's dawning on Tim that it's important to God what Tim wants. Mm. And so that was kind of a breakthrough for me, I think, in that, and there's this famous line that gets quoted by Howard Thurman, though some people are wondering if he actually ever said it, but that don't ask what the world needs, but ask what makes you come alive, and go and do that, because what the world needs is people who have come alive.
Mm.
And so, I mean, I think God is involved in all of that, in discernment. I don't think, I mean, who knows? Who knows, right? But I try to be, I've tried to be open to hearing other people. And I'm still learning about myself. And kind of seeing, kind of trying to hone, and I think every year, or maybe more than every year, kind of evaluating, is this, am I happy doing what I'm doing? Am mm-hmm. I making a difference? Is there something else that I would like to do or try? And so I think it's been a continual process. And I think God is wrapped up in that somewhere. I think God works through other people. I think and that's, I think, where the kind of silence and the listening comes in, that for me, a lot of prayer is listening, just being kind of quiet and trying things out and knowing that, well, if this doesn't work, I can try something else. I mean, even mm-hmm. the chaplaincy was kind of led in some ways into that, and kind of a trial. Yeah, this feels right. This feels good. This feels like kind of taps into some of my strengths, and it also helps with my growing edges. I mean, it's it kind of challenges me in ways that I need to be challenged and growing. So yeah, so I think God's involved in all of that, but I think we're also involved. I mean, I don't feel that God is going to punish me if I make the wrong choice or do something that, I think those core values of, again, it comes back to me to love, that if God is love, then what does that mean for me to love, to love God, to love my neighbor, and neighbor as in anyone I meet,
mm-hmm.
the cashier at the grocery store who has been an essential worker and done, been there day after day, and you don't know what kind of a day they've had, or if they've had to fight with people to put a mask on.
Right.
And just to say that each person is worthy of respect and kindness too. I think sometimes being nice and being kind can be confused. Mm. I don't know that I'm always nice, but I try to be kind.
Yeah.
And, none of this, I've certainly, part of being human is that we are a work in progress, and I'm not there yet by any means. You can, ask my family, but I, each day I try to commit, try to have the intention of being the person that I feel I want to be, that God wants me to be. And that involves loving others and extending kindness and being grateful.
Being grateful, yeah. When I was in seminary, so I went to seminary in the Bay Area, and for a while, school was in Berkeley, and I lived in San Francisco for a while, and I made the commute over over the bridge. If for those who know the Bay Area, there's, you know, you go over this giant bridge between the two places, and often there was, the traffic was just kind of unbelievable, especially by Montana standards. And there was this day that I was headed back home after a long day of school, and I got to the toll booth and, you know, paid my toll. And the toll booth man said, you know, here's your change and I love you. And I was like, what? I ended up actually writing a whole sermon sort of based on that story. But just as I drove off, I thought, like, what if, like, that's just what he said to everyone? You know, like, what if, like, that was a really, like, I just felt like it was this moment that, like, maybe God was showing up in this toll booth operator of, like you said, like, loving your neighbor. Like, he just was, like, random person driving through paying their toll, like, I love you. And just kind of, like, what that would be like if we approached people with that. I don't know. It was, in the midst of this, like, crazy making commute of being, like, cranky, just this, like, really grounding moment of, like, oh, that's, you know, in some way I feel like that's what's, you know, God or divinity or whatever is calling me to be in the world, is that person who can just be like, oh, I love you.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So let's see. So I've only done, like, one pilgrimage in my life so far. And that's, early on, I don't know how many years ago, maybe 15, I read about this pilgrimage rite, the Camino in Spain, which is pilgrimage to where supposedly St. James is buried. But it was a pilgrimage route for over 1,000 years. And before that, before Christian times, it was the Romans. It was, I think there are those places, sacred places, that, because you look at where churches are sometimes built, they're often built where, you know, predecessor religions had spots, that they're just kind of this recognition of sacred spots. So anyway, finally, about 3 years ago, I decided, yeah, I'm going to do this. So I did. I went by myself. And so this was in 2017, which was the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, you know, Martin Luther nailing his 95 theses to the church door. So I thought about this, that I, as my denomination was celebrating the kind of the 500th, the big birthday of the Reformation, I was making a pilgrimage across Catholic Spain. And in some ways, I think that summarizes somewhat. And so for me, when I came back, people said, oh, did you have any great religious insights or spiritual experiences? And, you know, yes and no. It was a lot like life, that you got up every morning and, you know, put on your backpack. I stayed mostly in the hostels, the albergues, because I wanted to travel kind of low to the ground. And I met people from all over the world. And there were a number of hospice nurses that were doing this. So, woman from Korea, a woman from Germany, people who were doing it because they were doing it kind of for someone who was sick, or in Thanksgiving, gratitude for, you know, experiencing some kind of healing from cancer or something. Other people that were just kind of between, a lot of young adults who were, I would say, searching. I just love the conversations with people. And that's something else. Sometimes I find folks that don't identify as religious, that the conversations can be more authentic in a way, if that makes sense. That sometimes religious people can kind of put on a mask and kind of deny the humanity. But anyway, so lots of just kind of great conversations. And you might meet someone and walk with them for an hour, or you might, you know, be on the same pace for a few days, or you might meet someone early and then not see them, and then a week later see them again. And you know, it was hot. I went in October, but it was still warm in some places. And so kind of each day getting up, putting one foot in front of the other, and just being open. And I think part of it, I love, you know, just being outside, walking mm-hmm. all day, every day for 5 weeks. But the people too, sitting with people, hearing their stories, experiencing, you know, sunrises and sunset, often starting before dark because the days were getting shorter. And, you know, and the pilgrimage site was great. The, you know, Santiago, the cathedral, which, you know, is partly under renovation, and they have this giant sensor that they swing. It's like eight people to like swing.
Oh my gosh. Thing.
I mean, it's really, you know, this huge deal, you know, and that was great too. But yeah. And then I went on to the ocean, to the Atlantic, and spent some time there. I guess I really enjoy extended time away. You know, I can work, you know, in a week I can work very hard and, you know, in, you know, kind of seasons, but I enjoy just extended time away and dipping into something different.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're just about wrapping up with our time. Thank you so much for sharing all of your insight and your story and your curiosity. It's been great to talk with you today. And if there is sort of anything else that didn't get said that you feel like you want to include here in the last few minutes.
I guess, yeah, just again, just gratitude for the opportunities I've had and the experiences. Between college and seminary, I spent a year on a cattle ranch. I didn't know how to ride a horse or didn't know much of anything, but the people were really gracious. And I guess that's been my experience, that if I'm open and willing to learn, willing to be vulnerable, willing to enter into a situation with some humility, that for the most part, people are gracious and welcoming. You know, not 100%. I mean, everybody has their struggles, but that at the core, we all care about the same thing, about our friends, about our family, whether it's, you know, a graduate student from Iran who, you know, we, in terms of our nation, you know, supposed to be an enemy. But when you talk with people one-on-one or small groups, you find that we really share more. We have more in common than we do different. So I think in my own small way, I work to build those bridges and promote understanding and, you know, and peacemaking, maybe try to bridge the gaps or the distances between people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, love, kindness go a long way. Respect for the other person go a long way towards that. And, you know, being willing to say that I'm not always right. Mm-hmm. and being open to learning. To still learning. And I, you know, there are lots of things, you know, I still want to do. But thank you, Katie, for the opportunity to share, to ramble a bit, and trying to be faithful and gracious.
Thank you so much for listening. And if you have a story of your spiritual journey that you'd like to share, please feel free to reach out. You can find me online at www.whatyouseeksd.com or email whatyouseeksd@gmail.com. This has been Spirit of the Valley.